Welcome to the Chrisman Commentary Daily Mortgage News Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Chrisman. Topics on today's episode include average real estate commissions in the U.S., my interview with cross-country mortgages, Nicole Perrone, on ways lenders are expanding production and capturing market share, and don't base your career on a Fed rate cut. Thanks to this week's podcast sponsor, PHH Mortgage. From subservicing to correspondent lending, MSR / co-issue transactions, portfolio retention, reverse mortgages, and commercial servicing, PHH has solutions for the entire mortgage lifecycle. Clever released data on average real estate commission rates in the U.S. as they stand now. Clever found that on the median-priced home of $431,000, the average U.S. home seller pays real estate commission fees of about $23,662. In a survey of 630 partner agents, the average real estate commission rate in the U.S. is 5.49%, divided between the listing agent at 2.83% and the buyer's agent at 2.66%. The average commission rate rose from 5.37% in 2023. Most real estate agents typically work within a range of 2.5% to 3%. Several key factors influence this, such as property value, client relationship and circumstances, sale complexity, services provided, and market conditions. Hawaii is home to the lowest average real estate commission rate at 4.78%, while West Virginia has the highest at 6.67%. For today's interview, I wanted to welcome to the show Cross Country Mortgages and Nicole Perrone to talk about ways lenders are expanding production and capturing market share. I'm going to change things up and start by letting her introduce herself.
Just briefly, my background, I spent 12 and a half years with Wells Fargo. And most recently, when I was there for the last 2.5 years, I ran private mortgage for the number one branch in the country in Manhattan. And the predominant focus of our business was portfolio business and the affluent customer. It was a private mortgage group, and just really interesting to see the transition in that space overall, and how much business is securitized by the government agencies. So I don't know if you thought that would be cool information to cover, but happy to kind of hit on that if you want to talk about anything from that perspective.
Yeah, so I'll get into that, but let me start by asking you why the move from Wells Fargo to Cross Country.
Great question. Yeah. Really loved my time at Wells Fargo, grew professionally and personally, and had a lot of great mentors and a successful career there. And after 12 and a half years, I think that, with this market cycle, along with the change that many lenders have made from a retail strategy perspective, it made sense to start looking around and see where's the predominant share of the business. And where is the predominant share of growth? Is it in the IMB or in the bank world? And I think across the board, we can see right now that the banks have significantly reduced their overall footprint and market share in the mortgage business. And in addition to that, have made some pretty big changes when it comes to the portfolio side of the business. So the focus on just jumbo, when you look at the overall market as a whole, was a difficult one, especially being in Manhattan. And we decided to come to the number one lender in the country, where they had the product set and the ability to have a tech stack and plenty of options for customers in this environment. So opened up the box to no overlays on agency or FHA or VA business, opened up the box to non-QM lending, reverse mortgages, renovation, home equity lines, C2P, all these products that customers really could use in this market, as well as having the ability to leverage a lot of bond and DAP programs that first-time homebuyers need in these environments, and some of the best products from each lender. Like for example, the City Home Run product is a product that we have here. And to have the ability to look at the landscape and say, hey, we can offer you several different options in this environment is a really big thing. When you're looking at the overall share of the business contracting, you need to expand. So that was the biggest reason for the move.
Before I ask another mortgage-related question, I spend my springs and falls in New York City. What is your favorite restaurant or dining experience in Manhattan? Let's keep it to Manhattan.
Oh, wow. Well, there's so many great places in Manhattan to go. I'd say that one of the ones that I used to frequent quite often was Doc's Oyster Bar, that which was closest to the office. So it's one of those things where you're consistently just running out to get something to eat. But I've been watching this new restaurant that opened up called Maven, and that's one that I'm hearing a lot of great things about. And I would recommend everyone go check it out.
I've heard a lot of good things about Maven too. I'm a high diner person down kind of near Bowery. It's on Mott Street near Spring Street. So, all right, let's get back into mortgage here. I talked to a lot of people on this podcast, talked to VPs of lending. You are SVP of production. Can you explain what the SVP of production is responsible for at a mortgage lender?
Sure. It's not too different from an SVP of lending. You know, we kind of chose the production instead of the lending because really that's what we're focused on, increasing production, which in turn increases lending. So essentially my role here is to help grow the overall market share for cross country by bringing on great leaders and great producers across the country. So that's the predominant focus. We've been focused very closely on the metro market within the Carbon team, which is the number one team in the country for cross country mortgage, and are working, you know, to look at the gaps and where we have states or geographies where we really want to continue to grow that market share. So predominantly, I'm out there connecting with loan officers, working to educate them on what options available, and see if they're ready to listen, to see what else is out there and learn the competitive advantages that exist here.
Well, before we started this interview, you were mentioning to me offline, you just read some very interesting production statistics from MBA. I'm wondering if you could share those with our listeners today.
Sure. Yeah, I would love to. I think that when we go back to the reason for a move, when you look at the overall market share in the business and you look at the distributed retail footprint and you see where the overall market share is going, it's overwhelmingly in the government GSE space. So, you know, when you look at data from 2022, which was recently cited in an MBA letter to the subcommittee, you can see that 70% of homebuyers who used mortgage financing took out conventional conforming loans securitized through the GSEs, 14% FHA loans, 9% VA loans, and the other approximately 7% used conventional jumbo loans. I'd argue to say if you looked at 2023 and even if we had any data into 2024, that you'd see that number is continuing to increase in the agency space. So when you look at the focus of the IMB lender, there's a lot of options within that category. Additionally, you know, when you're a loan officer thinking about, well, where do I want to focus? What is my specialty? You really need to look at the pie. You really need to take a look at where is the business? Where is it being securitized? You got $13 trillion of mortgage debt that's outstanding, and $9 trillion of it is Ginnie, Fannie, and Freddie. The other $4 trillion isn't really in the bank portfolios predominantly, and some other types of investors as well. And then to add, I think this is really important, you know, for your realtors, for your loan officers and your leaders, to know that, you know, roughly half of all purchase mortgages are for first-time homebuyers. And those first-time homebuyers, when you look at the percentage of them that are relying on FHA affordable mortgage financing, FHA in the fiscal year of 2023, 82% of their forward mortgage business was first-time homebuyer business. And when you look at the share of these consumers coming into market, it's critical that we have at these institutions that we work within, that we have all of the product to offer them, from the down payment assistance programs to the state grant programs and to the best in class that can help them to get financing on their first home. So I thought that was really interesting data to share and for loan officers to think about.
That is quite the stat about first time home buyers. And I do want to dive into these various offerings that are out there. It seems like lenders over the last year or two, with volumes dropping off, have been trying to expand their product box in order to be able to draw in more borrowers. And that's great. But have we seen any changes in the credit box or credit availability?
Absolutely. I think when you look at the landscape of, specifically, let's say the portfolio jumbo side of the business, you see massive changes over the last few years in that space where loan officers and banks are really trying to preserve their capital as much as possible, right? So if they're lending out $1 million loan or $2 million loan, well, they're highly incentivizing assets to be brought over in order to get a discount on that mortgage. Lenders are even evaluating this information, on a quarterly and annually basis to say, okay, well, we originated, let's say just random number, $100 million in mortgage financing. How much of that $100 million that we originated, how much did we bring in from an asset perspective? Was it $50 million? Was it $70 million? How much of it is staying here with us? So you look at the landscape of all the major lenders, Wells Fargo, Chase, TD, Bank of America, every single one of them has an asset relationship discount in this environment. So it's really important that producers that are at these institutions have the ability to find the clientele that can bring over those assets in order to have those discounts applied. So there's a big difference in the portfolio market because of that. Very competitive from an asset acquisition perspective. So you have a lot of loan officers out there today that, they may have clients in the jumbo price range, but they may not have the ability to bring over $1 million, or maybe their $1 million is already with another institution. So they're getting a great rate and there's no reason to move it. So you're seeing a big change there. I think when you look at the landscape of the credit box, yeah, there's definitely changes. I can't speak to every institution, certainly, but I can tell you that, the variance for exception at many institutions has become a lot more challenging. So when you look at, some of the overall mortgage production in the portfolio space, a large percentage of it had some exceptions related to approval, whether that be credit score, debt to income ratio, maybe a higher LTV request. Maybe the customer owned, more than five or six properties and there's a restriction there. A lot of lenders are looking for very, very significant offsets in order to approve exceptions in this environment. And I'd say it's the small minority of customers that can push through that exception box and find a way to approval. So really you're looking at the overall landscape of anything that's outside of your best qualifications in a customer on the portfolio end to have a lot of compensating factors if you're looking for any exceptions. So that's a great thing about cross country here. A lot of what we do is exception based. It's a lot of common sense lending. There's a lot of alternative avenues for documentation when it comes to income. We have some great portfolio products and great relationships with other banks that allow for products that that can serve that type of customer, whether it be FICO, LTV, income. And then when you're looking at the rest of the market, obviously when you're looking at the agency and government space, really aligning with a lender that doesn't have significant overlays can really help the market. I'd say that the biggest change though I've seen is really in that portfolio jumbo lending space.
What's a good segue about getting borrowers approved? Because I want you to take us inside the factory here a little bit. And can you explain to listeners the credit and compliance process when mortgage companies are looking to add new products?
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't personally handle, adding a new product or investor, but what I'll say is that, our philosophy here that I've seen since my time here is that we want to make sure that we have every product that's out there that's available, a product that we can offer to our customers. So I believe right now we have over 150 different investors that we work with, some of which we can broker to, most of which we were able to underwrite and we have delegated here in-house. So it's our underwriting team and our appraisal team reviewing, approving everything. But we have the ability to sign up new lenders as new products hit the market. So, obviously we have an evaluation process that we go through, but the communication is really open from that perspective. When we see something else hit the market that is a great product for consumers, you know, we want to make sure we can make it available. In addition to that, we've made some of our own really great products available. We're the number one retail lender, distributed retail lender for non-QM business right now. Additionally, the number one distributed retail lender in the country as of 2023. Some great results in that space. And then Cross Country also has what's called a community promise loan, which basically offers $6,500 in down payment assistance. It's our product that we offer. It's our money that we provide, and essentially, it depends on where someone's moving from geographically. So if you're located in an area where you qualify from an MSA perspective, it's not where you're moving to, it's where you're moving from. And the great thing about that product is there's no area median income restriction. Sometimes with a lot of these down payment assistance programs, the challenge is the area median income restriction is difficult when you look at the purchase price of a home versus the income requirement to utilize the down payment assistance. So this one's really about, hey, if you're moving out of an MSA that is a geography that there's a focus on, then you can qualify for this down payment assistance. So, you know, just really getting creative with coming up with our own programs. We have a great Cash Plus program right now where our customers are able to turn their pre-approvals into cash, essentially. There's certain qualifications, but essentially we fast track it, we move it into underwriting, and we're able to give someone an approval where they can go out and offer cash for a home, pay cash for a home, and then mortgage it after. So in this competitive environment, we're consistently looking for ways where we can help buyers win and help them, you know, get through the offer stage, get under contract, and close on a home.
Well, let's keep your thunder rolling here. And you mentioned at the start, it's all about production in your role. And I want to close by asking you, how are you winning market share or expanding current market share? How are you keeping production up, especially in a high rate environment like this?
Yeah, so I'll say, you know, I think a big part of that is culture and camaraderie and the ability for an organization to have a great structure where they're sharing information consistently, you know, across the country on what's working. I think progressive marketing and consumer facing and direct to consumer, we've never had a greater opportunity in an environment like this. With the use of social media and the ability to market with video and do podcasts like these, you know, getting your message out is just so much easier at an organization like this because of the progressive approach to the environment of kind of giving everyone their voice to communicate what's available and what's out there and how it can help people. So, you know, we're seeing, you know, some producers that are doing, you know, great first-time homebuyer seminars that are growing their followings really consistently on social media, leveraging the automation of email marketing and to stay in touch and stay in front of their clients and their referral partners. And then, you know, I think it was someone from Housing Wire. I don't remember the editor's name, but I think it was the data was as of October of last year when he ran it. And he had said, you know, there were $500 million producers that made a move in 2023. And of the five, four of them came to Cross Country. And I think that speaks volumes when you look at even the Scotsman's Guide, how much our producers are achieving in this environment. You can see that the ceiling here and the potential to, you know, to serve customers and to produce at a high level as a loan officer is there. And that's really exciting. And I think it's a combination of a wide variety of product offering, progressive marketing approach, a phenomenal tech stack where loan officers really have the ability to use tools to educate their customers and their referral partners. We have the ability to see who's really doing business in market to support the community and to get our message out there. And then also a phenomenal back end group that, you know, that really operates like a mortgage company. They're efficient, and we move quickly, and the communication and the transparency is there. It's just a great, great team and a great group. So it takes an army, but I think that this army has been built to serve, and that's why we're seeing such great results.
That's fantastic to hear. Nicole, I thought there was a lot of really valuable insight in today's conversation. So thank you very much for making the time for me.
Bond yields hit 2024 highs to open the week, with inflation in focus as investors continue to walk back interest rate cut expectations in the wake of Friday's robust March NFP data. As a reminder, March's job report was yet another this year that exceeded economists' expectations and saw the prior 2 months of data revised upward. Monthly job gains in the first quarter of 2024 averaged 276,333 compared to last year's 251,083 monthly average. The continued strength in the labor market means policymakers at the Federal Reserve have little incentive to lower the target for the Fed funds rate. The robust March payrolls report continues to weigh on bond markets, as it means that any change to Fed policy will likely be pushed back to later in the year. The front end of the yield curve was more reactive to changing rate cut expectations yesterday than the long end. The rate cut expectations will be a moving target in the next couple of days, with the release of March Consumer Price Index data on Wednesday and March Producer Price Index data on Thursday. CPI will be the most closely watched, and the headline number is expected to tick slightly higher to a 3.4% annualized rate compared to the previous report's 3.2%. This would be the highest rate of inflation since December. The core is expected to come in at 3.7%, down from 3.8% in February. Fed speak lately has been hawkish, and the sentiment for rate cuts seems to be fading fast. Minneapolis Fed President Kashkari last week raised the possibility of rate hikes if inflation doesn't continue to work its way lower. While Fed Governor Bowman declared the progress on inflation as stalled, Dallas President Logan added to the malaise when she declared it much too soon to think about rate cuts. Gasoline prices rose again in March as OPEC Plus producers extended supply cuts, the Middle East conflict threatened to broaden, Ukraine attacked Russian refineries, and U.S. crude production leveled off near a record high. Nothing here points to a near-term rate cut, and investors have decreased their forecasts of Fed rate cuts this year to 2 as the most likely outcome, their most pessimistic outlook since late October. June Fed funds futures now see slightly less than a 50-50 chance of a cut. Today's calendar kicks off with the NFIB Small Business Optimism Index for March and will be followed by Redbook same-store sales for the week ending April 6th and Treasury auctions that will be headlined by $59 billion of three-year notes. We begin the day with agency MBS prices better by about an eighth from yesterday, and the 10-year yielding 4.39 after closing yesterday at 4.42%. The yield curve inversion continues with the 2-year at 4.77%. Let's wrap up with a joke and some housekeeping. A bank is a dignified institution that was established for people to have a place to keep the government's money until tax time. That is a little too close to home. Thanks again to this week's podcast sponsor, PHH Mortgage. From subservicing to correspondent lending, MSR/co-issue transactions, portfolio retention, reverse mortgages, and commercial servicing, PHH has a solution for the entire mortgage lifecycle.
If you have any questions about the podcast or sponsoring opportunities, send me an email at robbie@robchrisman.com. Visit robchrisman.com for more information on our industry partners, access to archived commentaries, and how to subscribe to the daily mortgage news and commentary. To listen to or download past episodes of this podcast, search Mortgage News on any platform you get your podcast from.